Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse with Dr. Don McDonald. This show is for vitalistic chiropractors that want to take their practice to a new level. Whether that is higher volume, less stress, more congruency, or just want to continually learn and evolve. Every Wednesday, I will be bringing you an interview that will provide you with either mindset or strategies that will help you overcome your underdog curse. Whether you're plateaued, afraid to fail, or stressed out due to overwhelm, this podcast will show you how others have overcome their challenges. Make sure to go to www.drdonmcdonald.com where you can sign up to get notifications when new shows are released and see previous ones you may have missed. I hope you enjoy the show and don't forget to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Well, welcome to our next episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. And today I'm pretty excited because it's one of my best buddies from down under in Australia. I got to meet him probably about 9 years ago in Melbourne at a seminar. And we've been great friends since. He's a chiropractor, super successful, has a beautiful clinic in Melbourne, and has had a leadership role with the Australia Spine Research Foundation. He's traveled the world speaking. I think I've hung out with him in about 8 different cities, I think, around the world.
Yeah.
And including his city and including my city. And he's a master of communication. And I want to welcome my good buddy, Dr. Martin Harvey from Melbourne, Australia.
Thanks, Don. Great to be on the podcast. I'm super honored. And you could just keep talking for the whole podcast with that kind of intro. It's very flattering. Thank you.
That's no problem. Well, it's not hard to flatter you because you're a pretty good dude. He's funny. We've gone to quite a few seminars before where it's just me and Martin. And then I always joke around that Martin has to look after me and help order my beer and stuff. So he's like, if we look at about the personalities, I'm more of the amiable, the Labrador personality, and Martin's a little bit more of a driver, the alpha, and so he'll take the lead. And I think I've traveled enough, though, I might be able to order my own beer now. So I think I'm moving up in the world.
You're having breakthroughs at high levels. I'm starting to feel a little bit abandoned and unneeded there, Don. Can you let me just buy you one more beer?
Oh, I will not have a problem with that ever. So Martin's been in practice. How long have you been in practice for?
26 years now. So yeah, long time.
26 years. And you also, you coach, don't you?
Yeah. So I do some coaching and more communication training, I guess, through workshops and so on. So yeah, a bit of coaching, mainly practice, and then lots of training people to be able to communicate better.
That's awesome. And so you do little workshops all through Australia, and you were just recently, I think, in Chicago, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And also now doing a lot of the workshops online. So we're doing workshops where we do it as a series of webinars where there's interaction, we'll present content, people have time to go away and implement the strategies, and then come back to another session where we can then go to that next level deeper. So, you know, technology is a wonderful thing, helps us reach out to people from all around the world and share great ideas and great strategies.
Yeah, just like we're having a little chat from, you know, Canada all the way to Australia, just hanging out using technology. Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I like to ask a lot of my guests now is, like, have you always been this successful and awesome?
I choose to believe I've always been awesome. Certainly had some periods where I was not successful. So I think like everybody, I guess, you know, when you talk about the underdog curse, I was probably one of those people who had a different version of an underdog curse. I was always relatively confident in most things. You know, I did pretty well at school, and this is going to sound really wanky, but you know, I did reasonably well at sports. I felt really comfortable with people. So that type of thing, I sort of came into most situations feeling like, you know, that growth mindset that Carol Dweck talks about, where you come into a situation, you feel like you can work it out. Like I should be able to work this out.
Yeah.
So, but then I guess if you're expecting that you do well at things and then you don't, that was probably when I was reading your book, that was the bit for me where it was, becoming an underdog when you didn't look at yourself that way was pretty humbling.
So, when you didn't plan on it in the first place.
No. So yeah, that was, I can share a story about that if it fits, but yeah, is that cool if I just explain?
Yeah, well,
what I mean,
yeah, and it's funny because we're kind of the totally opposite, because you go both ways, right? Like I was the one who was so used to being an underdog, I didn't feel comfortable if I wasn't. And so it's funny because Brandy's the same. My wife, she's the same, where she's used to like having things under control, and if things aren't, then it's like that goes crazy. And I'm used to if things are crazy, and then if things go good there, I'm like, whoa, I can't handle this anymore.
How do I mess this back up?
Exactly. Then I'll feel comfortable again. Let's get it back down. So why don't you tell a story about how you kind of experienced it?
Okay. So for me, as I was saying, everything's going great. Life is really good. I was in chiropractic college, and we as kids had gone to a chiropractor, and we'd sort of gone proactively. It was something that, you know, a lot of chiropractors understand that if your body works better, and chiropractic is a tool to help your body work better, then life kind of goes better. Your immune system's stronger, you're better at sport, you're better at school. And so growing up, we did that. So I became a chiropractor, but not with any really high sense of purpose or contribution that I was going to go out there and help people. It was really like the chiropractor that we went to see had a cool sports car and he got to surf relatively regularly. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great. So I went into chiropractic college thinking that this is going to be good for me. I'm going to get all this stuff out of it. And I went to a chiropractic seminar where I guess for the first time I really connected with, whoa, hang on, this is a way that you can have a life of contribution. That everybody could benefit from having chiropractic care as a way of helping their body work better. And if your body worked better and your thing was that you were really focused on your role as a mother, then you would be a better mother. And if you were an athlete, that having your body work a couple of percent better might help with your athletic performance and injury prevention, and that it could also help people who had back pain, neck pain, headaches. And I think this sort of big picture for me got me super excited and almost a little bit evangelical about it. So I was, and in my mind, I'm like, well, I do things, and if I want to now spread this message, all I really need to do is go out and tell people that, you know, you guys should be having chiropractic care because life gets better when you have chiropractic care. And I guess that's where I went from this feeling of, yoo-hoo, I've got this, I'm good at things and I've got this idea to spread and people naturally want to take that on. I kind of came crashing into, that's a very different perception than what's common and mainstream about what chiropractic's about. So I kind of crashed headlong into that. So I'm in this seminar and I went to university, I went to chiropractic college in Sydney, and this friend of mine and I, Kieran, had gone up to the Gold Coast in Queensland, which is now it's probably only an hour and a half flight. But this is the early 90s when flights in Australia were really expensive and way out of a student budget. So we had caught like a bus and a train and, you know, overnight and all that kind of travesty of horrible public transport sort of stuff to get to this seminar. We end up at the end of the seminar super excited about this message we've got to share with people. And we get back on the bus and the train and whatever else to come back to Sydney, and the whole time we're talking about what we'd learned over the weekend and how excited we were, and we hadn't sort of noticed, but on the train on the way into Sydney, the last sort of 5 hours, there'd been this older woman sitting in the seat behind us listening to snippets of our conversation. And so we're coming in super excited, no sleep, but excited about the potential that we had to share this liberating message with the world. We pull into the train station in Sydney, and this old woman comes up to us as we're getting our bags out of the train, and she does this, you know, beautiful old woman voice, like, "Oh, so I couldn't help but overhearing you young chaps there, and, you know, are you medical students?" And we looked at her and we said, "No, we're not medical students, we're chiropractic students." And the look on her face was of abject horror. It was almost as if we'd confessed that we were pedophiles or something. She just like, "Oh my God." And she had nothing to say. And it was the first moment that I'd sort of crashed into, oh my God, this idea that I think is really important, I'm not that great at talking to people about. And I had a number of similar situations where I would start to talk to people about chiropractic and they would be confused, or, "Hang on a minute, isn't it a way of cracking the back for people with back pain?" And all these ideas that are understandable but not really complete around chiropractic. So I guess I had became a massive underdog at that moment. And so I kind of looked to, well, what are the ways of communicating that? And some of the people who were, I guess, similarly engaged in wanting to get the message out to more people and were similarly evangelical were literally evangelical about it. And they were very much like that. Our job is to ram our message down people's throats. And if they don't immediately understand it, we need to almost kind of harass them and debate them until they agree with our point of view. So I call this period my chiropractic asshole period, where I was just, it was almost like the means justified the end. It didn't matter that I was combative about it. I just had this important idea, and it was almost really kind of paternalistic. I just had to tell you what was important for you. Yeah. So it was kind of a way that didn't really match me. I hated the confrontation and combativeness of it. And look, truth be told, it's not a very effective way to win friends and influence people. So I guess that was kind of my big underdog moment, that just this whole roller coaster of experiences that just brought me to this point of, I have no idea how to reconcile this, that I feel like I've got this idea that can help people and I've got no skills to be able to do it effectively.
That's awesome, because it doesn't even necessarily have to be a chiropractor, but it could be anybody. Like if you have a great idea and you want to tell your spouse or your kids, or you're at, you know, if you work at a job or you have an idea for a business or whatever, it doesn't, or want to write a book or something like that. When you have an idea, sometimes you're going to get smacked in the face like that too. So how did your journey start then? Like how did you kind of start to learn how to not ram it down people's throats, to kind of be a little bit more finesse about your communication?
Yeah. So to me, the lesson that I 100% agree with what you're saying, Dom, that this is a lesson that's true for everybody, that communication is really our fundamental skill, and it's our skill to be able to have an effect in the world, no matter what we want to do. And it's most important in terms of our personal relationships. And to me, if I boil down the skill that I didn't have the ability to communicate with people when communication was difficult, when we had different beliefs about something. So in my particular case, the difference in beliefs was around the role that chiropractic could have. And then sometimes it was a bit bigger than that. It was a different health beliefs. And it doesn't really matter whether the difference is in health beliefs or if you're parents and you're having a disagreement around the way that you should parent a child, or if you're talking to your life partner, your husband, your wife, your spouse or whatever, and you have a difference in the way that you should manage money or where you should go on vacation or any of those other things. The core skill there is, how do you manage conflict? How do you manage different beliefs where you can still maintain a respectful relationship with the other person without ramming your belief and just trying to debate them? How can you effectively present your idea in a way that's going to impact the other person and not you know, piss them off and get them to reject your idea. So to me, what the pivot point for me was really that I was pushing, trying to be the, I've just got to push this idea and then I've got to toughen up and recognize that to be a revolutionary, sometimes you're going to get arrows fired back at you and just all these things that kind of intuitively didn't feel quite right. And then really the point was that I looked at it and I thought, there's got to be other people in the world who are trying to communicate new ideas or are trying to communicate ideas that don't currently have mainstream connection or belief. What are they doing? And so I started to look, I guess, outside my immediate group of people in chiropractic trying to communicate that idea and looked in areas like social psychology. And broadly, it's an area called the influence literature, which is research that's done by social psychologists, behavioral economists, mental blank. What are they called? People who do neurological research. Neuroscientists is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
The irony of talking about communication and then having a complete mental blank of an important word is not lost on me. But basically people who are, they're all looking to answer the same question, which is, why do we do what we do? How can we influence other people's beliefs? And how do we sort of stay in agreement with people? How do we stay in connection in a relationship with people while we do that? So go on.
No, I was just going to say, that's pretty awesome. And so how long did that take you? Like, was this a year process or did it take a while to figure it out?
Yes. So look, it was a gradual process. Once I kind of dove into that area though, it was pretty quick because the first book that I read in that area is a book called Influence, which is by a guy called Robert Cialdini, who is the kind of godfather of this area. And so he has in it a whole lot of strategies that are really the bedrock of this area in terms of how do you structure communication in a way that can be more effective for people. And so once I got that and started to realize how applicable it was and really in a lot of ways how simple it is, particularly in that area of managing difficult situations, it's not a hard thing if you understand some of the psychology of it. So often one of the things that I think I thought, even though my lived experience was different, was I thought that if you just gave people logical reasons for something that would automatically change their beliefs. And it's just wrong. Like, you know, the reality, the influence literature tells us is that people tend to make decisions emotionally and then rationalize them with data. And so if we make somebody wrong, whether we're making our partner wrong for their parenting choices or we're making somebody wrong as a chiropractor for their health choices, we kind of lose the ability. That emotionally feels really unsafe. If we're very strongly wired to want to feel like we're right, if we're made to feel that we're wrong for believing something, it affects our sense of self-efficacy, which we tend to then respond to that by a thing called confirmation bias, where we go looking for all the reasons the other person's wrong and all the reasons we're right. And so neurologically, we just kind of embed our existing beliefs. So if we just push our opinion on somebody else without respecting their ability, their right to have opinions of their own, we actually embed their existing beliefs rather than having any influence on them at all. So,
so even pushes it further apart almost.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was one of the skills or mindsets that I really didn't have going into it, which when you read the influence literature, but that book in particular, the first one that I read, the Cialdini book, that once I read that, it was like, oh, hang on a minute, I've got to work out a different way around that. And there's a couple of really simple skills that you can develop that anybody can do anytime you feel that. So, and interestingly, even though I wasn't consciously aware of it, everybody would have had the experience where you come into one of those difficult situations, you know it's a difficult situation even before it starts to unwind, because you get that little feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, oh, hang on, this feels a little bit uncomfortable, or you feel your heart rate pick up a little bit, or you get a little bit clammy or sweaty, and that's like a signal from your nervous system that, all right, this is a potential threat, like your a very low level fight or flight response, because there is the potential for conflict in that. So if you get that, our natural, the danger is that we're kind of biologically wired for fight or flight. And if we're having a potential disagreement with somebody, it drives you into two directions that aren't all that useful. You either want to fight, like the I'm going to prove you wrong kind of approach, which doesn't work because of confirmation bias, yeah. Or you just want to run away from it by going, oh yeah, okay, you're probably right then. And
that would have been my version. That would have been my yes. version. I'd yes. been, oh, that's good. Yeah. Okay. See ya.
Yep. Yep. I'm wrong. Yes.
Yeah.
And then the third one, you know how it's really fight, flight, or freeze. The other one is some people in these difficult situations or situations of conflict just do the, I don't know what to say, you know, and hope that the world somehow swallows them up and the situation goes away. So
and then the funny thing is with those people is that afterwards they're like, oh, I should have said this, or oh, I should have said that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, with all of them, and the reason for that, if you look at it from a neurological perspective, is if we do see something as a threat, neurologically we have a higher level of activation of our primitive part of our brain, which is all about fight or flight. And we actually reduce activation of our frontal cortex. And our frontal cortex is the part that's all about relationships and altruism and complex thought and problem solving. So the dynamic is you feel stressed, the part of your brain that could give you those solutions is switched off. The part that's all about fighting or flighting is switched on. And then it, later on, when you're not stressed, you can think of the right thing that you should have said. So,
or the sad of what you did say, or you'd be like, oh, I yeah, shouldn't have said yeah. that. Oh, darn.
Yeah, I should never have said that. Yeah. So because the primitive part of our brain prioritizes automated or things that are sort of embedded functions, things that you're used to saying all the time. So part of what in the communication training that I do is I can share a couple of skills if you'd like in a second, but the first few, you have to do them over and over again, ideally in not super stressed situations, so they become like automatic responses to anytime you're stressed, these are the things that you do.
Yeah. So you don't wait till a stressful situation to try something new, right? Cause you just, are you going to, yeah. I always say it's kind of like, it would be similar as if you, you know, you've always followed this old path in the bush and you're always following yeah. the same path. And you say, I'm going to go another way. And you've walked the other way a couple times and then all of a sudden a bear's chasing you. And then you'll definitely go down the old path. Cause you're like, I'm not going to find that new path. I'm just like, I go down the old path. So it's very good. So just remember when you learn these things, practice them when you're not stressed so that you can start to create a new neural pathway.
Absolutely. So the first skill that I teach anybody from a communication perspective in these difficult situations is anytime you feel that little bit of, oh, this is a little bit uncomfortable, is you use permission. So the way that permission works is, let's say you and I were having a disagreement about something, Don, which I can't imagine, but let's say we were having a beer-related disagreement where I was trying to convince you to have a beer of a type that you didn't like. Or let's say instead of having a beer, I was trying to convince you to have a glass of wine.
Oh,
rather
yeah.
than going, rather than like, you know, don't be a wimp, have a glass of wine, stop drinking that soft beer. Rather than attacking you, I just need to, the way permission works is I just say, Don, would it be okay if I explained a couple of things that are important for you to understand?
Yes. No, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay. And so the key thing there is for permission to work, you have to wait for the other person to say yes. Otherwise, it's not really permission. But what happens neurologically when you ask permission first is the other person, rather than feeling like they've been made wrong with whatever you say, actually neurologically and psychologically says, well, I asked for this, so I've got to at least allow it in. I've got to at least examine it.
At least
and
hear it out.
Asking permission. Yeah, I've got to at least hear it out. And also permission communicates to the other person that you're respectful of their sense of self-efficacy. You're respectful that they're allowed to have beliefs of their own, that, and you're sensitive to that in the way that you're putting your information. So no matter what the source of disagreement is, you still get to say the same thing. I think you'd really be better with wine. It's got fewer calories. You're not going to have such a big beer belly. It goes better with the food that we're having. This is a wonderful wine that I think you'll really enjoy. Any other reasons that I want to use that are logical, but I've handled that emotional part of it first by recognizing the emotional context of, if I make you wrong, trying to prove you wrong, then you're not going to emotionally engage with that decision in a positive way.
Right. It's just like you put up your shields and you go, whatever you're going to say next, I'm not going to listen to if I'm on defense.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So super simple strategy, but super powerful. And for me, if we go sort of full circle into that, this is where I started. I ran into these problems. I had this big idea that I still believe is transformative for people in terms of their health and their life. And then, but it's not something that people automatically have a belief necessarily that's consistent with it. It requires a lot of people to rethink the dynamics of health. If I just ask permission, would it be okay if I explain a little bit deeper? Then it's a really massive difference in the intake of the information.
That's why I love this, because, part of being an underdog is not having the resources or the skills. Like that's part of it. And so I think that is super helpful for people who are listening out there, because there's not anything, nothing you can do in this life doesn't revolve around other people or communicating with other people. And so do you think you can give us a couple little skill sets that we can kind of work on to help us with our communication?
Certainly the permission, I would be suggesting people practice that. If you're one of the people, like most people, who don't love the idea of confrontation, permission would be the first one. Mm-hmm. And I'd suggest you drill that, practice that. And then if you were looking for another skill, like a second skill that you can add on top of that to enhance your ability to manage difficult situations, the kind of next level one, the black belt, the blue belt version, is one that I would call, that's called yes and. So yes and actually comes from improv theater. So improv theater, where people are given a scenario, they haven't pre-prepared anything, and it's the interaction between the actors that creates the comedy and the creativity and so on. It looks chaotic, but it actually has rules that the people who are doing it have to follow for it to work. And one of the rules is yes and. And yes and essentially says that if you and I are doing improv together, then I can't disagree with what you've just said. So let's say we're having an improv experience and you say, we're out in the park, it's a beautiful day, the sun is shining and the birds are chirping. And then you're passing over to me to then run with what the scenario that you've started. I can't negate your scenario. I can't say, and then big black clouds came over and there was thunder and lightning and everybody was rained on and miserable. That's against the rules of improv. I have to take what you've said as true, and then I can pivot from that. I can say, and then the wind came up and blew leaves everywhere and whatever else. I can pivot from that, but I can't make you wrong. And so what it does from a communication strategy is, if we're having let's go back to our beverage disagreement. If you're saying, I really feel like a beer and I'm trying to convince you to have a wine, the first step of yes and is, I agree with you. Look, I understand why you want a beer. Beer's your favorite drink. It's the end of the day. It feels really relaxing to have a beer. And so the pivot is, I can't make you wrong for your decision. I'm not even trying to look to whether that's a good decision or debate it. I'm just presenting, I'm pivoting from that and going at 90 degrees to it rather than turning back and trying to go 180 degrees back against your decision. So it would be, yes, a beer would be a great idea. It's refreshing. It's the end of the day. It's your favorite beverage. And it's also sometimes great to try something new, and the type of food that we're having, there's a red wine, a Tempranillo, that will go with it beautifully. It really complements the flavors. It's in that same sort of depth and has that refreshing sort of aspect to it that I know you really like. And I think if you try the Tempranillo, you'll find that you'll really enjoy it. And so it's a way of positioning another idea without negating the first idea. And it actually taps in philosophically. So the idea that we tend to have when we're looking at presenting ideas, if they're not immediately in agreement, is a modernist idea where only one idea can be true, whereas yes and is actually a postmodernist idea, which basically says, you can have lots of things be true. What's actually more important is what's useful. And so if we're presenting information to people or ideas to people, yes and is a really cool one, because it doesn't really actually try and make them wrong. It doesn't even really debate which one's a better idea. It just agrees with one and then offers a different perspective. So it's counterintuitive for a lot of people. Most of us are wired to be more in that. We've got to have that debate about this and work out what the best one is. Whereas yes and works really, really well to get to people to start to consider a new idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you don't want to go yes, but.
Oh yeah, yes, yes, but is the wrong way of doing it. It's the exact opposite. Yeah.
Yes, but no. Yes, and no. That's awesome.
Yes.
Well, that's cool. Yeah.
So it actually, the other thing that I like about yes and is another communication skill. So we often think about communication as being, I want to get my message across. And one of the biggest communication skills, and I know this is something that you're really good at, is actually better communicators are better listeners. And so yes and requires, it forces you to be an active listener, because to be able to do the yes, you've got to kind of accurately give back their what you feel like you understand of their belief is to satisfy the yes part before, and it correctly positions, I've got to hear you before I then add on a different perspective called yes and.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of like when you first did this, like maybe a different example in a different situation, even though now I do feel like maybe having a wine, but if you give me a different story or example.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So if I do a parallel example of the old crone in the railway station where she had this, you know, really negative association with chiropractic. So I had a similar scenario where I was at a dinner for a different group. It wasn't a chiropractic function. So I'm sitting next to somebody. We're doing the classic, what do you do? What do I do? I say I'm a chiropractor, and her response was that, oh, so you're a back cracker, are you? I heard that it's okay for back pain. So this perspective that was kind of very limited, and to old me, I would need to be the crusader who would prove her wrong that chiropractic was about enhancing your whole body. It wasn't about back pain. So if you can double these up. So in that scenario, as I recall it, I said to her, so look, I understand completely where you're coming from. Would it be okay if I just offered a slightly different perspective? She's like, yeah. So look, a lot of people, I hear often that people say chiropractic's a back cracker and it's good for back pain. And there's also a perspective that housed inside the spine is your nervous system, and your nervous system is kind of the master control system that runs how everything else in your body works. So a lot of the people that we take care of are people where what we're actually doing is helping their spine and nervous system work at their best so that all the other parts of their body can be healthier and they can be happier and they can be more active in the things that they like to do. So you just, in that same scenario, it's okay that she has a belief or an understanding that's different to me. I don't need to crush her and prove her wrong for her belief. I can just go, look, I get it. That's a belief that we often hear. And there's also a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's cool. And I think that'll be super useful for people, because I know, being in a situation where you suddenly, because sometimes what happens if you're not prepared beforehand, haven't practiced this stuff, you actually get in it and like you said, your brain shuts off and then you just go into default. So it's nice to kind of have a back plan that you've actually practiced in the past.
Yeah. And the cool thing, if we look at the first one, permission, if you can pattern yourself to just automatically under stress, ask permission, it diffuses the confrontation part of it. And so it's much easier to get back into that frontal cortical perspective about honoring other people and connection and those type of things, because you just wind everything down.
No, that's awesome. Well, that was great. That was two important points that I think anybody can use to benefit. Now, just in closing, for those that you don't know, Dr. Martin Harvey is an amazing storyteller. So I just wanted to open up to you and ask, is there any in your closing words, you want to end with a story and want to end with some words of wisdom to anybody who's out there listening that, you know, is feeling like an underdog? They're either addicted to being an underdog or else they refuse to be an underdog and they're having a hard time. And again, most of this is all about, you know, afraid of what other people think or people pleasers or kind of like, you know, limiting what they truly, I think the whole goal of this is, you know, just to get down to be authentic and live the life you love to live. And just so that you're just good, not stressed, doing the stuff you want. So any words, wisdom, stories that you'd like to share?
Okay. Yeah. So I think to me, not so much a story, but a perspective that I think can be really helpful. So we always, I think from our own perspective, if we're seeing ourselves as an underdog or we're put in this underdog perspective, we can sometimes look at those motivational bromides of, you know, just do it and just, you know, power through and so on. And for some personalities, I think that sort of perspective can work. And then there's a lot of us who kind of, we can sort of intellectually see just, you know, power through and face the fear and do it anyway. But that can sometimes not work for us. And I think the perspective that you offer, that really what it's about is creating looking at the mindset that will allow you to see things in a better perspective. And we get to choose our mindset. That would be the first thing. We can choose to see things in a whole lot of different ways. And choosing a mindset or choosing a perspective that enables us is a really good first step. So, and the second thing is that really the difference between people who are successful and who aren't successful, it's more about the skills that they have and the support in the relationships that they have to support them, rather than it being some innate thing. And so working on skills is the best way to launch yourself forward. So in the scenario that I'm talking about in terms of communication, it is a skill. It's not while there are people who are more naturally gifted than others, you can work on your communication skills, and the more skilled you get, the wider the scope of areas that you can be successful in is. And skills, there's a science to developing skills. It's just repetition on things that you're not good at, so it will feel a little bit uncomfortable, but that's really all it is repetition of skills that you're not currently good at. And that, so if we kind of drill that down into something that's a little bit more coherent as a takeaway, it's moving ahead. It's okay that you get to choose your mindset, and then once you choose your mindset, you just get, all you need to do is to develop skills, and all skills is a process of repetition over time at things that you're not currently good at.
That's awesome. Yeah. And again, part of it too is who you hang out with too, right? So a lot of people I know said, well, what do I do? Like, there's nobody who's inspiring who lives in my town. And I always tell them, a lot of my friends live all over the world. Like, I got Martin there's people from all different places. And the thing with technology and Skype and all that stuff is that if you can get to seminars, you know, meet other inspired people, it kind of, you feed off each other as you kind of inspire. So I think that's the great thing, is develop your skills and expand your network so that you can hang out with awesome people like Dr. Martin here. So Martin, thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, no, that's my pleasure. I want to thank you so much for the opportunity. I also want to, you know, acknowledge you for all the awesome work that you're doing. The book is just, I think it's a phenomenal perspective for people in terms of becoming more successful. So really honored to be included in something connected to it. So thank you.
Well, that's awesome. And like all my first interviews, I'm kind of interviewing all my buddy and all my friends from around the world that helped inspire me to write the book in the first place. So I'd like to thank you too, Martin, for being part of my my dream team of inspired buddies. So I appreciate it. And all you guys out there, take care. And we'll see you on the next episode. And don't forget to crush the curse. Sweet.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.